I said it does. But
they don't consider her.
Yeah, consider me a real lawyer.
Good afternoon.
Sure.
I'm Charlie Cheek from Legislative Council, just for the record. My understanding would be, yes, that if a nonprofit corporation was using the crib in the context of reselling it in a thrift store or something of that nature, or for some other purpose, it would, in fact, be a commercial user of the product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 501c3, by definition, is nonprofit corporation. Yeah. That was the question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Matthew.
Well, Do we have separate definitions for nonprofit corporations and corporations?
Usually we use the tax definition, the 501(c) definitions.
I'm sorry.
We normally use the tax designation of the 501(c)
to
nonprofit designation.
Nonprofit.
Yes.
So, but I'm trying to look at the definition of corporation in statute. I'm showing that there are three of them, but I'm not sure that any of those incorporate nonprofits. But for instance, in 60001 sub 5, corporation or domestic corporation means a corporation for profit.
I couldn't tell you, sir, without searching for corporations in all the statutes.
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, I just want to make it clear that because the bill sponsor's intent is to include nonprofit corporations, and I would just simply suggest that on page 1, line 26, after the association, we insert nonprofit.
Charlie, give us an amendment here.
Yes, sir. No problem.
Well, let me see if we got one in. Yeah, but commercial user, but then it doesn't necessarily include a nonprofit.
No, give us an amendment here.
Oh, you want me to?
Conceptual.
Oh, conceptual. Sure. And as Senator Minnis indicated to you, sir, it would simply could insert after in line 26 after the word association, corporation, take out or insert a comma, association or nonprofit corporation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one other suggestion, not to usurp counsel here, but in 65001 definitions sub. Where is it? It's sub 25, nonprofit corporation means mutual benefit corporations, public benefit corporations, and religious corporations. I don't know if that encapsulates it or not.
It sounds to me like that may be part of it, Senator, but I'm not sure.
Not all.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think probably we would reach your intent by just saying nonprofit corporation.
Okay.
So moved.
So you need this amendment, John? This amendment.
Well, I think that it would clarify that in the event that if you had an action taken against a nonprofit and they claim that the definition does not include nonprofit, it says corporation, you go to the corporation statute, it says clearly for profit. I think they've got a good argument that they're not included.
That's true.
And the conceptual amendment.
Okay. Read it to me again, please.
Mr. It would be on page 1 of the bill, printed Ann Gross bill, line 26, after the word association, insert comma, nonprofit corporation or association, and then it would continue comma, or any agent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Counsel, that sounds.
Yes, sir, except I would take out the word or. So it would read firm, corporation, comma, association, or nonprofit corporation.
What he said, or nonprofit corporation, Sir Director.
Okay, happy? That'll work for you?
Just
so moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Cordney moves the amendment, the conceptual amendment, as described by counsel.
Yep.
Can we call that a dash half?
I don't know where we are in this thing. 1.5.
All right.
Chair, I move House Bill 3962 as amended to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
And according to 3962 as the conceptual amendment before the do pass recommendation. Further discussion. Objection hearing none, so ordered. Right, Senator Minnis, you have this one without question.
Your
fingerprints are all over this baby.
Well, thank you, Senator, Mr. Chair, and I hope to be back before this committee.
And well, seeing you next session.
Thank you, everyone.
Right here, Vic, yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Fred. Close work session, open work session, House Bill 2988. Jenny Lang, Roy.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roy Hemingway. I'm the chairman of the Public Utility Commission. We're in support of House Bill 2988. What this bill does is it adds language to PUC statutes which require the PUC to allow an oral argument in a major case if one of the parties moves to have such oral argument. You'll recall that last session the legislature passed House Bill 3615, which set up a task force to review the processes in front of the PUC, and one of the recommendations was to increase access to the commission itself during rate proceedings. Commissioners usually don't sit and listen to the entirety of testimony in rate proceedings. It's rather lengthy and complicated. They usually read the record in the case, and many participants in cases felt that that meant that they didn't really have an opportunity to address commissioners face-to-face on the important issues in a case. And I, for one, believe that that's an important part of any major proceeding in front of the commission, and I believe this law, this bill, would establish the opportunity for oral presentation of the commission in an appropriate manner.
Okay. Good, Roy. Thanks.
I do have one minor concern about this bill that is a bit wearing my old hat, which is in Section 2, the Public Utility Commission and Commission staff are asked to provide assistance to the Legislative Assembly and its committees, and of course we would do that in any case. Carried to its extreme, this language says, and the Public Utility Commission shall furnish to the Legislative Assembly and its committees such information, resources, and advice to the legislature, meaning that a state agency would be providing resources to the Legislative Assembly, which does raise a constitutional issue about separation of powers. And this is an issue of the governor's office. It's not a particular issue with the agency because we will do, of course, everything possible to assist the Legislative Assembly in the performance of its responsibilities. But I don't want this bill to raise a constitutional issue.
So for the record, we don't mean that you provide us with all sorts of bells and whistles.
Yeah, or funds or staff.
Yes, to get into the separation
issue,
for the record. Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brown.
Roy, would it probably be better resolved if we could delete the word resources?
Senator Brown, I do believe that would go a long way towards resolving that problem.
Mr. Chair, if we can add in nonprofit corporations, why can't we take out resources?
You guys, can I ask a question?
I think he's right on this.
Can I ask a question? Let me go get the lawyer. Make him
another lawyer.
I'm sorry. Where did Section 2 come from? The whole section.
Senator Courtney, in discussing this bill with committee staff in the House and with other interested parties, including consumer groups and utilities, we discussed only Section 3. And so Section 2 appeared in the bill as it moved out of committee, and I don't know where it came from. I don't know whether Jenny Lang knows or not.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Senator Courtney, Commissioner Hemingway is right. The only discussion that we had in our work group was around the language in Section 3.
Well, I have to tell you, I don't know why. If you're going to do what you're suggesting, I don't know why you even have Section 2 in the bill. I mean, I don't understand what's going on here. I assume it's already the case that the extent that we request information, they will grant it up until the point of separation. I don't understand where this two came from. It just, it doesn't make, if you look at the original bill, it's not in there. And so it gets amended in there by the amendments, that's for sure. And I don't, no one seems to know where it's from, and I'm trying to figure out if you're going to take out shall furnish or research information, I don't know why you don't just take the whole section out.
Mr. Chairman, I think if you, on line six, if you just change the shall to may, I think you will avoid the separation of powers problem.
On line five.
After staff, change the shall to may. Makes it permissive.
Yeah, then you got to do the may, you got to make it may, shall's going to be may on line seven. You going to do that?
Yes.
I just hate this.
Well, I still would like to know where this came from. Nobody knows. Nobody has, did it come from one of the representatives?
Senator Courtney, I don't know. And, of course, as long as I am at the commission, we will do everything in our power to ensure that the legislature has the assistance of the commission to the extent within our resources and the extent to which we can do so within constitutional bounds.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the specific origin of this, although there has been some concern this legislative session on the part of some members at some state agencies, which are an executive branch of government, have not cooperated fully or provided documents and information necessary for deliberation. So this may be an attempt to try to get you to do that. But there's clearly a separation of powers problem here. The resolution is for the Legislative Assembly to subpoena the various documents and or to take sworn testimony, which they can't do.
There we
go. This is the Ekus Amendment, right?
And we got this sort of smart lawyer here.
Which, this is Ron Ekus's amendments?
No, this bill is the Ekus bill.
Memorial bill, I think.
And the amendments are the Ekus Memorial, too?
Lawyer!
Where is he?
Lawyer person.
Lawyer person.
Not an artist, you can't tell us.
Section 2, issue about making the executive branch furnish materials to the legislative branch. Senator Minnis suggests we change all those shalls to may.
Chair Harper, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks, Deputy Legislative Counsel's office. Certainly you can. I'm not sure the bill that section does much then, since they certainly can do that now.
That was Roy's concern. Is this concern? I guess is the question.
Yeah, if I think the intent on the section, just based on the language of it, was to require them to do this rather, and because obviously they can always provide assistance, et cetera, upon request from the Legislative Assembly or from members from that matter, and I'm sure they do so on many occasions. So.
Senator Brown's question.
The issue, though, is a separation of powers. Is it not? I mean, if the PUC is required to provide us with information and resources at our request, isn't there a constitutional issue there?
Chair Harper, Senator Brown. I'm not terribly sure of the answer to that, to tell you the truth. We tell agencies to do things all the time, including providing information, et cetera, to the Legislative Assembly and to provide assistance, et cetera. Resources might raise some issue. I mean, depending on what that resources means, that would be of some question if you were requiring them to provide somehow other funding or something for the operation of the Legislative Assembly. That might be an issue.
Mr. Chair? I move that we delete resources then. That's the issue.
Senator Courtney?
I'm just curious. This wasn't part of the original bill. You know where it came from? Or can you tell us? Okay.
You wrote it, didn't you?
I'm sure I did. Country. Look here and see if I can answer that question based on who asked it. Chair Harper, Senator Courtney, it looks like it came in as a request, at least the final one was a request from the Advancing E-Government Committee on the House side.
Mr. Chairman.
So, yeah, Senator Minnis.
I guess I would just argue that the simple changing of the shall to the may, although it doesn't seem to do much, leaves a footprint in the sand that the legislature is asking them or requesting that they do something that we know they may resist. We're hoping that they don't, because we're really saying, I guess, in essence, in statute, that there's a concern that there may have been a problem in the past. But I have a real problem with leaving a questionable issue of separation of powers in there, because we have the power to subpoena documents. We have the power to compel testimony that's sworn that has certain penalties if there's false testimony, and so on and so forth. So it just seems to me that what we're saying to PUC is, look, we want to cooperate with you. We want to have the information. And it's a footprint in the sand. Hopefully that will satisfy the chair of the e-commerce committee, who's had at least a principal role in some of these discussions.
By shall to may.
I mean, changing the shalls to the may. And I think there's an arguable separation of powers question here. So.
Yeah, fine with me. Dave, that fit with you?
Yeah, I have no problem. I think we could, you know, that's a pretty easy one to do. Shall to may is not a tough one. It looks like it appears in two places. May provides, right now it shall provide such assistance to the legislative assistance. Assembly and its committees, and then shall furnish such. And so it looks like you've got two shalls that turn to may.
So we'll take resources out.
Well, if it's a may, it's permissive.
Right, it's permissive.
It's a may. Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. Okay. You comfortable with the conceptual on this?
I am.
We'll blame you if it goes wrong.
No, Senator.
Okay. All right.
I'll withdraw mine.
Okay, withdraw yours. Uh-huh. Okay.
On the motion?
Motion.
Mr. Chairman, on the motion would be on line 5 of the printed engrossed bill. Delete the word shall and insert the word may. And also on line 7, delete the word shall and insert the word may.
Senator Minnis makes the conceptual motion. Any other discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And Senator Minnis moves House Bill 2988 as conceptually amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Yes, sir, I do.
Further discussion? Objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And you got another one, buddy. Closed work session. Open work session. 3502. Now, I don't like doing amendments at all. You guys are pushing me here today.
And Mr. Chair, well, we at least have a fallback position in case there's a conference committee, and this committee, the chair of the e-commerce committee, is unhappy about changing the shall.
That's right, yes. 3502, Gary Bauer, John Powell. Oh, and Roy, sorry. Now, this is Duncan-esque. You guys don't wait on us.
Okay.
Just press right ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Gary Bauer, representing Northwest Natural. We've distributed some joint testimony from Roy Hemingway, chair of the commission, and myself on this measure. There were considerable discussions between Northwest Natural and the PUC when we developed the language for this. It's patterned after a U.S. Supreme Court case called the Hope case, which establishes the appropriate standard for setting rates. And we believe that it's important to insert that and track that into Oregon law for the commission to, so it ensures that we have a clearer standard for the commission to follow when they establish rates for regulated utilities. What the bill does is makes it clear that when setting customer rates. The commission should protect customers of utility services and should also consider the needs of the utilities to attract the financial capital necessary to provide adequate service to customers today, tomorrow, and on into the future. We compete for capital with companies of comparable risks from around the country, nationally and internationally, and that's important for the commission to take into account as they're setting rates. The other comment I guess I'll quickly make, just so there's no misunderstanding, the commission sets rates on a forward-looking basis, so this one would not change any past action that the commission has taken, and respectfully request that you send the floor to the bill to the floor with the due pass. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Roy Hemingway, Chairman of the Public Utility Commission. The statutes as they are now written set the standard for rate cases in Oregon as prevention of harm to consumers and protecting consumers, which is a perfectly appropriate standard. But as every public utility commissioner, utility regulator in the United States today knows, there's a constitutional question as well, and the Supreme Court has spoken on this issue as well as the lower courts. And the leading case is this Hope Natural Gas case from the 1940s that Justice Douglas wrote an opinion in which he stated that it was constitutionally required that public utility regulators afford a company the opportunity to remain financially healthy and compete for capital. And the Oregon statutes did not have that standard in them, and we felt it was perfectly appropriate that the statutes be amended to contain that standard, which has always been there anyway as a matter of case law.
Okay, so this seems to work with you.
Yes.
John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Powell, representing AT&T. And Mr. Chairman, my purpose for appearing before you today is simply to enter this letter that's been just handed out to you into the record. As you know, over the last decade or so, the differences between the regulation of energy utilities and telecommunications type utilities that got so different in terms of the fundamental laws of the country, both the Federal Telecommunications Act and competition beginning in the telecommunications area, that the statutes were actually separated. The energy statutes were separated from the telecommunications statutes. That being the case, we can understand why House Bill 3502 is appropriate for traditional rate-based and rate of return regulated companies, such as energy companies. However, we did want to make it clear that we've had discussions with the Commission staff to assure that the language here would not filter down into the regulation of some of the wholesale items that some of the competitors have to buy, and other charges, such as access charges, that make up a good deal of your long-distance phone call, which are the costs that a long-distance carrier has to pay a local exchange carrier, both at the originating end of the call and the ending end. So your local telephone company charges AT&T when you get a call or place a call, both at the origin of that call and the termination of that call. So those make up a substantial portion of the cost of long distance. So our point in entering this into the record is to assure that this change in the law and this regulatory scheme would not, as the Commission has assured us, change the downward trend in those costs and be used as a method of increasing those charges under this scheme. And we've been assured that this letter is simply to state that for the record along with this bill.
Okay. And Roy, everybody's, we understand what we mean. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Courtney.
I'd just like to point out that I'm glad that John Powell has been assured, but if you look at the existing law and this law, I think that the law would allow for them to do the regulation and some of the things that the letter is concerned about, but I'm not going to get into that since still willing to live with whatever verbal agreements have been entered into. So with that, I will move to send House Bill 3502A engrossed to the Senate for the due pass recommendation.
Senator Cornyn moves House Bill 3502A engrossed before the due pass recommendation. Further discussion, objection, hearing none. Senator Byra, you're made for this one. Give you a good head start here. You can spend some time down there and learn about what this thing means. Closed work session. Open work session. House Bill 2841. Marjorie. Rob Myers. Doris Pinwell.
Oh, great. Okay. Okay.
Shoot.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Doris Penwell. I'm from Economic and Community Development Department, and I am here with my partner representing the Laura John Day Regional Partnership, who were the folks that asked that this bill be sponsored. I'll just briefly tell you what has happened. The Laura John Day Regional Partnership is made up of four counties, Wasco, Wheeler, Sherman, and Gillum, and they are part, they were organized as part of the regional and rural investment programs at the that are a spinoff of the Economic and Community Development Department's efforts. When they put together their long-term and short-term plans this last biennium, they decided that they wanted to have a more strategic attitude about investing monies that come from the department through these regional and rural investment funds. And so they decided they wanted to try to invest the money for both administration and as loans and grants. And the statute, as it was revised last session, simply said that, you know, when you put together a two-year plan, you had to prioritize lists of projects. And so the scheme in the statute didn't really fit what they wanted to do. Our Economic and Community Development Commission thought it was important that they be allowed to plan locally and do something in a long-term sense, and agreed that if they would sponsor such a bill, this would be a good, simple fix to allowing them to plan for their own future. So the department has agreed that this is a very good change to the statute. It does allow, you'll note in the language in Section 2, it allows regional partnerships authority to do some things that maybe regular regional boards can't do. They are allowed under the current statute to have a little more flexibility, and they don't always have to come to our commission, but regular regional boards do. But anyway, I think this is what was intended by all parties, and we have all agreed that the language is good for the future.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. Any?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Myers. I typically represent Gillum, Sherman, Wheeler counties on education and telecommunications issues, and I'm not as well versed on this as I should be, but I'm here at the request of Mike MacArthur, who is the chairman of the Laura John Day Regional Partnership. Judge MacArthur couldn't be here today because he had some county business he had to take care of. He asked me to please express his support for this, and by extension, the support of the Laura John Day Regional Partnership, in order for them to be able to more strategically spend their money and effectively and efficaciously invest wisely in those rural areas. Thank you.
Good. Questions? Okay. Senator Cornyn.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2841A engrossed to the Senate for the due pass recommendation.
Senator Cornyn moves House Bill 2841A engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion, objection, hearing none. The order. I'll carry it.
We'll have
Senator Ferriola carry it. Yes, good job. Good job. Although we need Senator Duncan to carry that last one. I don't know how that got by me. Closed work session. Let's see. That was all the bills today, and we'll open work session on committee rules. We're not doing that today. Committee rules, a cleanup, you'll notice on page 3 are the changes.
Basically, Elsie and Marjorie felt better if we changed essentially the shape files when people are making amendments to the data files, and we'll take it from there to make sure there aren't any errors. Everything else is good along with that, right, Marjorie?
Appendix B describes the process that legislative council and our office will undertake to actually produce the amendment.
So Elsie thinks we need to make these changes, so Chair moves that we adopt these committee rules. Discussion, objection, hearing none, so ordered. And with that, we are adjourned.
Okay.